You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Yesterday, we had on the show a former director from Grant Thornton, South Africa. And it was a horrible hour to listen to. It was difficult listening and it was tough listening because Narisha Singh, who was a former director in the forensics division, told the story of sexual harassment that she had experienced at the hands of Vernon Naidu, the head of her department, her superior, her boss. And as a result of that, fast forward, she, of course, now is no longer with the company, and neither is Vernon Naidu. And the podcast has already been downloaded thousands of times because there's massive public interest in the story. In the unlikely event that you have not yet listened to that harrowing detail of her experiences at Grant Thornton, go to 702.co.za or to capetalk.co.za and you can listen to that podcast. I will one last time tweet it and Facebook it during the course of the day for those who might have missed it. But of course, journalistically, we have to also ask the company to respond, and ethically as well. And that's exactly why we have in the studio with us the Deputy CEO of Grant Thornton South Africa, Gillian Saunders. Gillian, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Eusebius.
Do you believe Narisha Singh?
I have heard Narisha's story. It sounds very plausible. It is a horrible, harrowing story, as you said. We went through that with her. We took that statement with her. We heard what she read out yesterday. We deeply regret as a firm that anything like this could have happened in our organization. When it was brought to our attention, we took the right steps. And perhaps this is a moment that I can give you the chronology of events. The director she reported to had resigned somewhat into his resignation period. She also resigned. We accepted her resignation. And after that, I sought her out to have a conversation as a colleague, as a person who had perhaps mentored her during the process, to chat about the resignation and what was happening in her life. And that's when she brought up the sexual harassment, and I was horrified.
So you accept that she was sexually harassed by Vernon Naidu? That's a fact. We can take that as common cause between you and me.
I am not able to say that that happened because we went through a process which is exactly what one has to do. And I commend Narisha for being brave enough to put her statement and the other complainant for being brave enough to put their statements out there, because by doing that, they enabled us to have the process, which was a disciplinary hearing. We went straight to a precautionary suspension of the person. We had an independent chairperson of the disciplinary hearing. We helped prep both the other lady and Narisha for that hearing. But sadly, what happened is the complainant, the accused, during the course of the hearing, took very ill, and the independent chairperson had to have an inconclusive finding. So there is no finding for either party. It is not satisfactory for anybody involved that there was no findings and no conclusion for this matter. It is really unfortunate.
Gillian, far be it from me as a man to say this to you as a woman, but women do not want to be patted on the back for being brave. They want to be believed, particularly when they knock at the door of the deputy CEO. Do you believe these women?
I had to take up their cause on behalf of the firm, because a sexual harassment charge is something the firm takes against the individual. On that basis, we as a firm thought there was a significant merit in everything they said.
Do you believe them?
Their statements were plausible.
Do you believe them?
I cannot comment on that, Eusebius. Further, I've explained the conversation or the hearing was not conclusive.
If a director of the seniority of Narisha Singh cannot get the deputy CEO of the company to unambiguously say, "I believe you," why should other women come knock at your door?
I think we need to look at sexual harassment. And we have very good sexual harassment processes and policies in place in our firm. It's a separate policy because it's a very, very specific harassment. And we do not condone it in any way. Therefore, it's clearly spelled out what constitutes sexual harassment. We then go into a process. It's the labor law process. And that's the way the process works. We were not able to conclude. I sat with Narisha. I sat with the other lady. They were, as you said, harrowing, harrowing experiences. And to hear them related was not nice for me, the other HR people involved. We listened to it. Your listeners have all listened to it. It was not pleasant.
What is even more unpleasant for listeners is having the deputy CEO not being able to straightforwardly say, "I believe this woman that she was sexually harassed." You are using lots of interesting words, anything but a straightforward, "I believe her."
Eusebius, those statements were plausible. In these processes, both parties have to be respected. And until the process concludes, there are rights of both parties. And we have to be cognizant of that. We support anybody who brings these types of things forward. And we would implore everybody else to be as brave as these ladies were so that we can
take them.
But
why would they
forward.
When you don't believe the women that have come before them? I mean, the plausibility language is interesting in law, but this is where crisis communication and speaking to Norton Rose doesn't help you from an organizational culture and PR point of view. It is plausible that there may be a cat at my feet, but that is not factually a true statement. Women don't want you to say your story is coherent and plausible. They want to know whether, with the evidence that they put before you, SMSs, being abused by this man, necklaces that he has bought, perfumes, and we have many other women, I'm going to talk to you about them in a second, the evidence is there. The language of plausibility is a failure to straightforwardly say, I believe you.
We took the appropriate steps to take the case against the alleged or the accused person.
But you're not going to tell us that you believe the woman. You're going to hide behind processes that were disrupted by the resignation.
I'm not hiding behind the processes. I'm giving you correct statements of the facts.
I think that is absolutely shocking, to be honest. But maybe you also want to listen to a woman who called my producer, Megan. And this is a second woman who told us her story. And I have to say to the listeners, this is a trigger warning because many of you struggled with Narisha Singh's testimony yesterday about what she had undergone at Grant Thornton. And she did not get any kind of straightforward recognition of a lack of safety at the firm in terms of what she had experienced. And I'm very sorry to do this to you as my listeners because I know triggering experiences for women can be very difficult on public radio to listen to. But a second woman, Christine, who shared her story with my executive producer, Megan, told a story that was so horrific. I'm very glad she didn't tell me that story because I don't think I would have been able to handle it with the same professionalism as my colleague had done. And I want Gillian to listen to this story as well and react to this particular story, if I might play this, Gillian, to you and to my listeners.
Yusubis, we are aware of Christine's complaint.
The public is not aware.
No, that's fine. I'm happy.
What we do, which many corporates don't do, Gillian, is that we give women the right to tell their story. This is the story of a woman that called in after my show.
I've known Narisha for about 2 years. I was employed at a previous employer with her, and she brought me to Grant Thornton. She really helped me because we both brought forward our sexual harassment cases at the same time, and we were sort of going through the process together, and just hearing her speak out, I realized that, you know, I wanted to show my support for her and sort of create additional awareness about the fact that there are things that are not entirely, in my opinion, ethical that are going on there.
So to just go into, obviously not as granular detail, but I believe you worked for Vernon Naidoo too, and he's went a little bit further than just gifts that were given maybe to Narisha. Just explain some of the red flag moments that happened to you that ended up, I believe, with a charge, if I'm correct.
That is correct. So I started working on the 22nd of May. My birthday is in the beginning of June on the 6th. And I think it was either on the 7th or the 8th. He took me to a client meeting in his car, and he presented me with a bottle of perfume. And he said it was a birthday gift. And I sort of went, thank you so much, but, you know, I can't accept something. It's too much. And he pushed me, and eventually I opened this bottle, and it was a stiletto heel, and it had Carolina Herrera Bad Girl. So there was a bit of a connotation with that gift. Mm-hmm. I said, thank you so much, but I really can't take it. And I tried to leave it in his car. Then on that same drive, he took me to the Four Seasons, and he, you know, bought wine, and he was talking to me about how he's a single man, but at the office everyone had said he was married, and he talks about his wife, and there was some conflicting information, which sort of, he kept on asking me about my relationship, and I told him that I was in a relationship, and mm-hmm. He asked me about why did I end my last relationship, and he sort of played a bit of a father figure trying to advise me, but it was a lot of personal information to someone that I wasn't really that comfortable or familiar with. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, because the reason we went there was because I, I was under the impression that we had a client meeting, which never happened. Eventually, I said, you know, it's getting late. Please, can we go home? I don't want to drink and drive, etc. And when we went home, he put his hand on my leg before I got out the car. And I just, it was very difficult to take. I didn't know what to do. I just jumped out the car and I went home. And then a few, was it weeks later, he told me that we were going on a business trip to Durban. And I packed all my things and I told my mom, you know, we're going on a business trip. It was really exciting. I felt that it was a really great opportunity. He told me that Narisha was in KZN. So I didn't feel uncomfortable. And he said that we'd be meeting her there and that we'd do this client meeting and I'd potentially get a new, company or contact that I would then be working with for the forensics field. Unfortunately, when we got to Durban, it wasn't the case. And he didn't tell me that we'd be staying over. And last minute, he sort of told me, and it's terrible because I have epilepsy and I don't have medication and I didn't have anyone to look after my animal and I didn't, so there were a whole lot of conflicting emotions that I was going through, let alone the fact that I didn't have a change of clothes. And so he, you know, walks me into the hotel room and I say, thank you very much. And he hands me a bag from Woolies with a pair of underwear and a fresh shirt. And he goes, you know, this is for you for tomorrow. And I can't explain it. I think my heart was pumping out of my mouth almost. Anyway, and then he starts to put his things on the bed next to mine.
In the same room?
In the same room. And I sort of went, what is this? And he said, no, it's Grant Thornton's policy that you don't waste money on room expenditures. Yeah. I didn't know what to do. And the worst part was that at this time my phone had run out of battery because I didn't pack a charger.
Sure, because you thought it was just a day trip in and out.
Exactly. Anyway, so I, you know, and to have a shower, I'd packed all of my bags, or my work bag, my laptop bag in front of the bathroom door. And I basically got back into my same clothes and I climbed into bed fully dressed and I didn't sleep at all that night.
Did he try something?
He did. I went to the bathroom in the middle of the night and I gave my flush of the loo, woke him up. And when I got back into bed, the bed was not empty.
Sure. Was he fully clothed?
No. He was just in, a sleep shirt and boxers.
What was going through your mind?
Oh, my goodness. I was so terrified because I didn't have any way. I thought, you know, my immediate thought was I should leave. But I didn't have any way to contact anyone. I didn't know what to do. It was probably about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, he started touching me. And he tried to kiss me, and I kept just pulling away and saying, please, can you stop? Please, can you stop? Please, can you get into your own bed? Mm-hmm. And eventually I managed to convince him to get into his own bed. And he sort of made jokes, and he laughed, and he said, you're such a child, and made me feel even smaller than mm-hmm. I already felt.
What is it like getting up in the morning and leaving together, and what is he saying to you?
I am in his car. He had a car charger, so I managed to charge my phone a little bit. I didn't say anything. He just started laughing and telling jokes and talking about the office. And anyway, we got on the plane, and he told me in the airplane that it doesn't surprise him that I broke up with my last boyfriend, and I'm such a terrible person, and I will never be happy and I'll never make anyone happy. And I'm such a prude and I'm an ice queen and I'm such a princess and all of these sort of very derogatory negative. And I was crying on the airplane. I was at the window seat and he was on the aisle seat and I was just begging him to stop talking.
Wow. So because you rejected him?
Yeah.
He became a bully?
Yeah.
Just to talk a little bit, because I'm sure we can go into more details. You were there for a period of 6 months. You then confided with Narisha, and both of you decided to take this case up and lay a case. What advice?
Yes.
Do you believe you were sexually harassed, firstly?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know if it goes on harassment anymore. I think it moves to assault.
Did you lay a charge?
I did. I spoke to the most wonderful man, Warrant Officer Mafua in Johannesburg, and he sort of helped me lay out a case. Unfortunately, when I told Vernon that I was going to, I told him to leave me alone or I would do something about it. He told me that he would ruin my career. He told me he knew the mayor, that he would make it impossible for me to find work again. And I was so scared. I would cry endlessly. I don't know what I would have done without my family or my boyfriend. They were really supportive, which was great.
So did you eventually, you know, take the charge?
I laid the charge before. So, well, if I may give you a layout of events, what happened was Narisha and I went to Jillian. So Narisha, I went to Narisha saying, you know, as my boss, she mentioned that things had happened with Vernon. And I went, oh, my goodness, you're not alone. This has been happening to me too. And I sort of told her some of the story. And the next day she'd contacted Jillian and she went to speak to Jillian first. Mm-hmm. And thereafter I spoke to Jillian.
What did Jillian say to you?
Well, Jillian said she was so sorry and she had a daughter and she understands how difficult sexual harassment is because she's recently had to lay a claim with a PE teacher for sexual harassment and la la la. But that Vernon's given in his resignation because he's struggling with mental issues. She didn't quite confirm, but she said that it wouldn't surprise her. These are her words. She said it wouldn't surprise her if he had some sort of mental disorder because he was always in hospital for something. I'm not entirely sure.
Did she at any point, did you feel that Jillian was on your side, that the support was there from leadership, that she was doing everything that she could? Did she talk about other cases? What did Jillian actually do?
So what she did is in that meeting, she said, I'm so sorry. And she said, we've heard other cases about it, but they decided never to make it official. And I've even got emails from her confirming that there were other cases. And she said, we're so sorry. And, I don't know, it was more of a verbal confirmation. But the problem is that after a couple of weeks, Vernon eventually came back. He was traveling and he was away and he was in hospital. And so I hadn't had to deal with him for a while. Mm-hmm. But on one day he got back and he sent these very positioning emails. And I could see that they were positioned to sort of say that I'd behaved negligently in the workplace, which wasn't founded on anything. I think it was because I was the only one standing up to him at the office. I don't know, I didn't let him get away with treating me badly, especially in front of other people. So I would.
You had to face him every day coming in. Eventually, you left the workplace because you feared for your safety. Is that correct?
Exactly. So what happened is I started working from home and he started saying that he never gave me permission to work from home, even though I'd gained permission from everyone else. And he started copying in directors, even though I'd come into the office every second day, collect work, do whatever I needed to do.
So unlike Narisha, sorry to interrupt you, but unlike Narisha, who, you know, resigned because she was pushed into a position where she was uncomfortable and now, you know, she has no sense of employment, what happened with your contract of work? Did you resign? Were you fired? How did they treat that? And were you offered anything?
So what happened with me is I sent an email to the office on this day where I actually said, I've come forward about sexual harassment in the company. I don't believe the company's actually done anything, because weeks later he was still coming into the office and he was telling me that I had to be in the same workspace with him, even after I'd spoken to management, which made me realize that management had actually done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It was only then when I broke down and I called my dad. I hadn't told any of my family about what was going on. mm-hmm. Because I was so ashamed. And I called my dad, and he immediately picked me up from work, actually, and he took me to the police station, and he took me to the labor lawyers, and he's just like, "You, this is not okay, what's going on, and you need to do something." And by the next morning, he sends me an email, and he said, "I've sent this to Grant Thornton." And so my dad is someone who writes for Newsweek and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and he basically threatened Grant Thornton that he would expose them mm-hmm. on media. And suddenly, lo and behold, the next day, I get a response from Gillian saying, "Oh gosh, so sorry, you didn't make this a formal complaint, so we didn't do anything about it." Sure. I'm not sure how much more formal a complaint can be than speaking to the COO and a director.
Mm-hmm. So, just in short, what do you want from this? Do you know anything about Vernon? Have you followed up with that the case that you took against him? Where is he operating? Where are you at right now?
So the only thing that I wanted that was part of my statement, I guess, that I gave to Grant Thornton, the only thing that I wanted was for Vernon to be discontinued, to be allowed working at Grant Thornton so that he wouldn't be able to hurt people moving forward. Mm-hmm. We started with a hearing, and then the next day he had gone back into hospital for mental issues, and he was unable to continue with the hearing. And as such, I was under the impression that he would discontinue working. However, I've recently learned that he was continued to be employed as a contractor and has actually worked back at Grant Thornton. I'm not exactly sure what that relationship is.
Okay.
But the only thing I wanted, I've never wanted financial anything. All I wanted was for him not to be able to hurt anyone else.
Gillian, that is shocking workplace sexual predation. You let these women down. Can we agree on that? You let them down as deputy CEO, and institutionally Grant Thornton let them down. I mean, I don't know what to say. Are you ashamed at least?
Eusebius, I support your right, and you're correct to bring these things out to the public. People need to know that this behavior is utterly untenable, and it was untenable the minute I heard it. I do not have the same chronology and quite the same detail as Christine as to what she said, but I was exceptionally distressed that she had experienced something, but I had no details. The details, she went to HR before her father got involved. She went to the HR lady, and we got some of the details out then, and we immediately said, at the same time as Narisha, "We are going to take this forward. We need you to give us proper statements." We helped them. Well, Christine had her statement done by a lawyer, and that came through to us a week later from the lawyer. It just so happened that Narisha also sat with our HR lady and did the full statement a week later. When we had the facts, because before that we
took a month before you acted. I've got the same evidence as you. I've seen the ledgers. I've seen the email paper trail. From the date that both of them had actually laid the complaint that you knew of, it took 4 weeks. 4 weeks for them to be in the same space as the predator. 4 weeks, Gillian.
During that period, we repeatedly...
What were you doing during that period?
Asking and asking them to go and make sure that they gave all the details to HR. We repeatedly said, these are the policies and procedures. We need a full grievance. We need it done so that we can take it further. And when we got the facts, we acted as fast as we could. We immediately went to the precautionary suspension within 24 hours.
Why didn't you do it immediately?
We did it immediately. The
necklace that this man bought her. Is that part of Grant Thornton culture that you saw him buy Gillian a necklace at the airport? Why did it take you 4 weeks before you acted?
I think it was maybe not 4 weeks, but we did act straight away.
No, it is, and I can prove it to you after this if you want. Because what these women have done, to their credit, and I commend them, is they've kept meticulous records which you are aware of.
It is everything they have done is to their credit. I really commend them for being brave, for bringing the facts through to us. And as soon as we had the facts that we knew the severity of what was going on and we had the details, we absolutely took all the steps swiftly, faster than anybody would have expected.
That's factually false.
Within 3 or 4 days, the hearing we had to give in 2 days' notice. The day after we got the facts and we assessed them, we suspended him. And then we went into the hearing. So that was as fast as we could. And it was absolutely necessary because of his resignation period was going to terminate. Our aim was to try and get this done so we could conclude while he was still an employee, because we did not want this to ever happen to anybody else. And we really want to take anything like this through to its proper conclusion. We, like Christine, do not want these things to happen to other people.
I'm afraid, Gillian, you are lying. And I've got the evidence right in front of me that you are lying, and I'm going to share it with the public and with you right now. What you are saying, I can prove to be demonstrably false. But in the meantime, here's the latest in Edom.
You're CBS Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
26 minutes before 10, we're in conversation with the Deputy CEO and Head of Advisory Services, Gillian Saunders, at Grant Thornton, where a sexual harassment scandal has been blown out yesterday by brave women that have spoken out. You are portraying a picture here of procedurally doing the most hygienic thing possible that you can do from a legal point of view. The problem is that it runs counter to a narrative that just cannot be stopped because too many women are speaking out. I want to tell you what we have learned in the last 24 hours, and then you can react in your capacity, Gillian, as Deputy CEO. More women have come forward. So for starters, it's not just Narisha and Christine. Just this morning before going on air, another woman, I'm going to call her just to, for the moment, shield her privacy because she hasn't yet told us we can use her name. Call her Michelle. Have told us about a case that she had laid against someone else, the acting CEO. She has someone who has confessed to her about a global director of the firm, in fact, that had sexually assaulted her as well. And in the case of Michelle, in fact, she says that she had shared this with you. In addition to that, you were empathetic with both Narisha and with Christine at the point at which they eventually did tell you what had happened to them. And you had said, I'm so sorry I couldn't have protected them. In fact, part of the reason why Christine, as we heard in that interview with Megan, had a sense of, I am safe with my deputy CEOs because you had said, I'm sorry at that point. And there's a pattern here of what has happened before. But fast forward to where we are in the present. Christine gets paid out. She's no longer there. Conveniently, a contract doesn't have to be renewed. You've got Narisha, 4 law degrees, one of the top forensic specialists, being told initially, stay on for 3 months. Then she reports to someone who doesn't have half her skill set. And then after the 3 months, this past Monday, she gets an email saying, we are making you a formal offer, provided you obviously don't go ahead with the CCMA processes, and I've seen their correspondence. 5 minutes before noon yesterday, you sent a letter after hearing how this played out on 702 and Cape Talk. And I'm reading now from a letter dated 27th of March, which is yesterday, in which Gillian, who is now here in my studio, had the following to say. Now, you, the public, can judge. Is this a company that is empathetic to women sharing their stories of being sexually preyed on? Is Gillian the assistant that a woman can go to when she writes this email after hearing the same harrowing podcast that you have listened to from a former director of the company? And this is what was said yesterday at five minutes before noon to Narisha Singh. We refer to the offer of employment made to you on the 26th of March. At the time when the offer was made, we verily believed that the relationship between ourselves was of such a nature that continued employment would be a viable and constructive way to resolve the disputes. And here's my comment, by the way, in parenthesis. So at this point, there's an acknowledgement implicitly that Narisha is a skilled woman. She's not useless. She can do her job. Why else would you give her full-time employment back? But then listen to the following paragraph and tell me this squares with what you've just heard from Gillian in the last 30 minutes. While we respect your right to deal with your concerns in the manner and forum that you deem appropriate, we note with concern that you have now elected to make negative public statements about the firm and its employees and with the apparent intent of causing reputational harm. We are also advised that your conduct, and this is an unsubtle legal threat coming up in the next clause, potentially constitutes defamation, which is unlawful. Given the nature of your conduct, we are concerned that a continued employment relationship would not be viable. As a result, we hereby notify you that the offer of employment will be retracted, effective immediately. The rights of the firm strictly reserved. That is disgusting, Gillian.
You've raised a lot of points there, Yusuba. So
you can answer all of them. I'm going to shut up and listen very closely.
Narisha is a very competent individual. You are correct. She was a director in the firm. She had great qualifications and great skills. Hence, when this process started, she resigned. We did mutually agree, she and us, that we would extend her resignation period. We then reconfirmed that her resignation was effective according to what we had agreed in terms of the extended resignation period. We at no time didn't say she wasn't a competent individual. She was great at doing the work that she did. But in view of where the forensics department was going, and what we knew about the future, we felt there wasn't an ongoing role for her there, and so we allowed her resignation to play out. She had resigned. She was not on a contract. Christine, we paid her to the end of her contract.
I said a lot. Is that all you're going to respond to? The pattern?
I think...
You've got Vernon flying a woman out to Durban, lying about a client event, only to appear in boxes, saying it's Grant Thornton policy for us to use one hotel room. Where's the empathy? Where is believing her story? Where is apologizing, if not to Narisha? Surely you at least believe Christine? I thought you were going to have a soliloquy responding to the detail of what we've just heard. There's a pattern of abuse here, and all you have to say is that processes were followed?
I was referring to the specific thing regarding the letter and Narisha. If we go back to Christine and Narisha, I think they have both said, I still am, and the firm is, has deep regrets about what happened to them. It was absolutely unacceptable and inappropriate. We referred them back to our HR policy and said, please inform us of the detail. When we didn't have the detail, we did not know how to act. During that time, it took them a while to act, even though we were asking them to please give your details to HR. As soon as they did that, we instituted the proceedings. We supported Christine extensively during the proceedings. She understandably did not want to be in the same room with the accuser. So we arranged for her to give her testimony by video relay. We sent a senior partner with her to sit with her for moral support during the giving her testimony. And it was, as you heard on that interview, harrowing for all concerned. It was not a story that we ever, ever want to hear about. It's utterly unacceptable. Hence, we were in that process with an independent chairperson to judge what had happened and make the right conclusions so that we could take the right actions with respect to the person who was accused. Narisha was willing to actually give testimony herself in front of him. But unfortunately, because the hearings were cancelled because of his illness, she never got that opportunity, which is very sad. We were supporting her through that process too. She was sitting with one of our HR directors. We did what we felt, or not what we felt, we moved as much as we could to move and address it appropriately in that short time period.
Gillian, this is you listening to a woman crying yesterday about being sexually harassed by Vernon. Your response was not to call in your PR person who's here with you and say, how do we handle this? Hopefully, this is what all companies should be doing by going into the attic and finding those values that we profess when we recruit and making sure that they guide your response. Your first response was adversarial. You revoke an offer that you made to her on Monday. Can you explain to me why you decided to revoke this? A woman talks about how she had been sexually preyed on, and your response is to revoke an offer of employment. I mean, please, that makes Grant Thornton an ally of patriarchy and misogyny, not a place where women are safe. Can you explain to me why you revoked this offer of employment after she told her story of being abused at the hands of a boss?
You see, Bess, I don't think the offer of employment or its retraction has got anything to do with the sexual harassment claims.
That's what you say in the letter. I've just quoted your words to you. You said, and I'll quote them again in case you forget what you said, while we respect your right to deal with your concerns, we note with concern that you have now elected to make negative public statements of the firm and its employees with the intent of causing reputational harm, which means that the reputational harm suffered by Grant Thornton because the director talks about being sexually preyed on by a man in the company is of far more concern to you than doing the right thing for the woman.
You see,
those are your words, Gillian. Read them back. I'll give you your letter you sent her. There's the letter you sent yesterday at 5 to noon.
You see, Bess, we supported Narisha to do everything we could in terms of the sexual harassment.
So why did you revoke the offer of employment?
Because we believe now that she is not willing and not interested in working. In fact, she has said that, not interested in working with us. And I don't believe...
But she could have told you that herself. Why did you revoke that? She hasn't had an opportunity to say, I don't want to work with you anymore. You revoke that. You are pissed off that she spoke out about being violated.
Our firm is concerned about our reputation. But we are able to stand here and cross my heart, head and heart, I know that we have done the right things and we were... As best as we could, we stood by these two ladies through
you
everything.
You haven't.
And we have a...
The two women are unemployed and Vernon is still contracted, isn't he?
Vernon is working for specific clients directly.
So he's contracted to Grant Thornton in South Africa. Is that factually true?
No.
Has he worked there after his initial resignation?
Not at our premises.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Because remember, this audio will live long after you and someone has called in and said they can prove this. When someone hears this being played back in a different, in a more legal forum rather than a media forum, your words will come back to haunt you. I'll give you another opportunity. Has Vernon done any further work with the firm after he initially resigned to escape the DC process being completed?
Eusebius, Christine is aware that we agreed with her that there was particular cases that he could work directly with the client. He's not on our premises. He's not working for us other than an invoice goes via us.
Okay, you're changing your tune there, but unfortunately for you, I've also done a little bit of law. Have you paid Vernon for services rendered after these complaints of sexual harassment?
We are a channel for his invoices.
You're a channel for his invoices? I mean, please, you can't get worse than that. Have you paid him for services rendered? Yes or no?
Eusebius, I'm not sure that this is the issue. The issue is that ladies didn't feel safe in our environment.
Can I tell you why it is the issue? Because the women who have spoken out about being sexually harassed are penniless and without a job. The predator in a different guise continue to be able to invoice you, and you are, quote unquote, a channel for his invoices. You are more than that. You are paying money into his bank account for services he continue to render, while a senior woman, 4 law degrees, including from Cambridge and Oxford, is effectively told, you are causing reputational harm, we revoke our offer to have you back, and Vernon continues to be able to invoice you for services rendered. I mean, that is just, not just bizarre, it is callous at the very least. And the legal argument, which I think you're going to find difficulty with, because many lawyers are talking when they heard yesterday about the possibility of vicarious liability at an institutional level. But this is not a legal issue, and I want to end here, just second last question. You know as much as I do that corporates often hide behind process and language. But the real question here is ethically and morally and culturally, did you do the right thing? And at that level, you've got no leg to stand on.
Eusebius, I am a person who would stand by that. On my heart and on my head, I know that we did the best we could for these ladies in the circumstances. We have good policies, and I implore all our employees, and if there are more people, as you say, we would like them to come forward through the appropriate channels. We're putting other channels in place. We have a 24-hour hotline service with counsellors at the end of that service, and we are there for all of the people, male or female. We do not tolerate this behaviour, and hand on heart, I know that we did everything we could for these ladies. They were very grateful.
If I'm a woman, I wouldn't take up your offer.
After the hearing concluded, or didn't conclude, it was inconclusive, both those ladies were actually very grateful to our HR team. They verbally expressed their thanks that we'd taken it that far, that we'd supported them through that process. They expressed those same things to me as well. I know we did what we could with the information we had and the processes we had, and unfortunately for all, it is horrific that it was inconclusive.
Oh, well, that's the understatement of the century, I'm afraid. On a parting shot, we've had other staff members who have not been arrested by Vernon talking about his general bullying and where he fit into the firm, talking about high-profile cases, how connected he is, how he knows people like Tom Oyane, the SARS case that you have worked on. I'm just going to give an opinion. You can choose silence. I think what is going on is not just sexual harassment, and I want the country to open up this conversation. I think what you have here is a case that probably connects even with the state capture of what's going on in this country and corruption. I think the reason why pests like Vernon get protected, including by women deputy CEOs, is because they're good for business.
I can confirm that I never, ever protected Vernon in my position at all. I was very open to the processes against Vernon that we instituted here. I think state capture has got nothing to do with the issues we're talking about at the moment. We're a firm that is very ethical, and we will support all our staff, whether it's whatever type of harassment. You've talked about different types of harassment. We don't tolerate it. It is absolutely not our values. And if people are concerned that they can't come forward, we are going to put better procedures in place now. Since those incidents, we have heightened we have gone to all of our directors. We've given them additional tips on how they have to behave when these sorts of things come to them.
Jalen, to be honest, you sound hollow. You don't even have a sexual harassment policy at the time of this happened. I've got it, yeah. You've got a policy called a grievance procedure. The word sex is not even mentioned in it. Quite frankly, I don't believe you, but what is the last thing you want to say to the public?
Eusebius, first, we do, and we have had for a long time, that is not the sexual harassment policy. It's a separate policy, and it clearly defines what is sexual harassment, and it clearly defines the steps to take to deal with it, and it is available to all of our staff. We are a caring organisation, and I will go back and speak to all of our staff. Many people were speaking to me yesterday with a great deal of care and support, and we will say, please, we are really sorry. We regret deeply, totally, that these incidents happened, and we supported those ladies through dealing with it.
Okay,
but if you have anything else that you want to bring to our attention, we implore you, because it's brave ladies like this that allow us in this country, and females and males and everybody, to address it in the workplace. And if we can't start addressing it in our workplaces and sorting it out, if we don't have the information, if the people don't come forward, we want to deal with it. We absolutely want to.
Because quite frankly, if Grant Thornton is caring, than Jacob Zuma and Shabir Shaker innocent.